Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast of the show, Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, your host, Shane Told, speaks to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a band. We got a very, very special episode this week. It's a live podcast. Fearless Records flew me out to Los Angeles, California to speak with three of my very good friends. We all got together. They had this really awesome pop-up shop that they have right in downtown LA. And we had this incredible, amazing, inspirational conversation with Vic from Pierce the Veil, Aaron from Under Oath, and Telly of The Word Alive. Three amazing people, amazing friends, and I was so happy to be able to do this and now bring it to you guys. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I want to thank Fearless Records so much for having me out. And congratulations to them. 25 years they've been a label. They've changed a lot. They've changed a lot in 25 years. But I will say, I am an OG Fearless Records guy. I mean, the Aquabats, Big Wig, Gob, At the Drive-In, they put out some amazing classic punk, ska, emo records back in the day, and they still continue to put out awesome stuff from the bands I just mentioned, Pierce the Veil, Under Oath, The Word Alive, and so many more. I Prevail, nominated for 2 Grammys this year. Congrats to Fearless Records on everything they got going on. Before we get into that, I want to remind you, you can always get in touch with me. It's very easy. You can send me an old-fashioned email, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my email. I am okay at responding. I'm pretty good at responding, not the best, but I do read them all. So if you want to get in touch, feel free to do that. Add me on social media. The show is at leadsingersyndrome on Instagram, at leadsingersyn, S-Y-N, on Twitter. My handle is at Shane Told on just about everything. So you can find me, add me, and you can get in touch with me that way as well. And, you know, people are always asking, Shane, how can I help the show? What can I do to support this thing that you put out every single week for free? And I have an answer to that. And it's called the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. I started this thing 3 years ago, this club, and it's been so awesome. I've met so many friends through it, and basically, it's what keeps the lights on around here. For as little as $6 a month, you can sign up. You get access to incredible bonus episodes, merchandise shipped right to your door, access to me. I do question and answer sessions every few months. All this other stuff that I do, I upload, and of course, access to an incredible community of other fans of the show. We do meetups all over the world. And I'm telling you, you're going to make a lot of friends. So check it out. The link is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Again, that's as little as $6 a month that gets you in. And it really does help support this show being free. leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. I'll tell you, it's been a very strange week being here in Los Angeles, just a few miles away from where Kobe Bryant was killed in that horrible, horrible helicopter crash along with his daughter. It has just been so painful. And being around here, you know, going past the Staples Center and just seeing everyone from in Los Angeles, even people not from Los Angeles, just being so sad. And man, you guys know, if you listen to this, I'm a huge sports fan, a huge basketball fan, and Kobe Bryant has been so inspirational for so many people. I don't always talk about stuff like this on the podcast, but for some reason I feel compelled to mention it and talk about him and what an incredible, incredible person he was and what he meant to so many people in Los Angeles and around the world. A lot of people don't know. He spoke 4 languages. He grew up in Italy. He was an ambassador for the global game of basketball. And being Canadian, and what basketball has meant to the city of Toronto, especially over the last year, it really is a sad, sad day. And rest in power, Kobe. You will be missed dearly, but never forgotten. Anyway, let's jump in to my conversation with Vic Fuentes of Pierce the Veil, Aaron Gillespie of Under Oath, and Telly Smith of The Word Alive. I'm stuck inside the madness. I know you found this, but I know we'll make it out somehow. It's like a war from within, just let go. Killing ourselves are cold. It's out of status. Sometimes it tears us, and we think we're better off alone. It's like a war from within, just let go. Killing ourselves are cold.
Everybody good? We can start this? Right. This is awesome. First of all, I want to thank Fearless for having me and these fine gentlemen here all together to talk about things. Mm. That's what we do. It's a podcast. Yeah, woo! Yeah. Feel free to, you know, celebrate this. Like, you know, you can applaud. We're gonna ask some questions later or whatever. It's awesome. And we don't do this live very often, so I'm excited.
Me too, Shane.
How many do you have live? Only a couple.
I think this is only the third technically live. Do you really?
Like a massive fan, yeah.
Do you?
I swear.
Do you have a favorite one?
You know, probably the William one.
William?
From Alice in Chains.
Oh, yeah. That was number 200.
That was right after we finished that tour.
And, yeah.
I never heard him talk on that tour. So I was sort of just like nerded out about it.
Isn't that funny? A lot of people that haven't done touring or bands or whatever, they think you go on tour and like the second you get there, it's like you're in like school and you're like all friends and like you do everything together and everyone sits in like a cafeteria and eats lunch together. It's like, no. Like we went on tour with Avril Lavigne in Japan. It's kind of random, I know.
That sounds amazing.
For 3 weeks. I saw her once, off stage, once. And that's like kind of normal.
Have you ever experienced like that you have to realize that you don't all come from the same background and the same city and the same vibe?
Except we're both from Canada, literally like she's 2 hours from me.
Oh, well, yeah, that makes sense.
but I know, of course, like you can consider that. Sure.
Like, you know, my band's from San Diego. We're like, chill. We're like, give me a hug, you know, and then we tour with like a band like 4 Year Strong from Boston, and
right.
We're all just
the
straight,
tough love.
The toughest Boston, most Boston as you can get, and they're just kind of like, "What are you doing, bro? Like, we didn't grow up like hugging each
Their
other."
Their hug
you know,
is a yeah, head nod.
It was something that we had to learn kind of early on.
Totally, yeah, they got good beards,
the best.
They're
absolutely.
Like such a bearded band.
I won't even look at them because I can't grow a beard, and it just makes me angry.
I think I'm the oldest one here besides Shane, and I can't grow a beard, so it's fine.
It's true. Yeah, okay. I'm winning. Winning something. Well, this is really cool, and part of why we're here together is the Grammys, I guess. I mean, you were nominated last year.
Yeah.
Congratulations on
Thank
that.
You.
Like, seriously.
Thank you.
So
I got to be honest. And I talked a little bit, I had Eric from I Prevail here earlier, and we talked about this because they're nominated for 2 awards this year, which is awesome. And I was saying, like, historically growing up, I always, like, kind of didn't give a shit about the Grammys because I felt like the music I truly cared about was never represented. And finally, there's a little bit of that there, right? What's your take on the Grammys and, like, historically, and how do you guys feel about that?
You're looking at me.
I feel like if I looked at Telly, it'd be really awkward.
Ordering
right
food at the table.
It's just all stare right at me. No, I think that I think it's pretty amazing when a band that comes from our scene, our genre, gets recognized on such a crazy level. It kind of always blows my mind. And I've seen like the genre kind of just grow from when I was a kid to, you know, seeing 100 people playing for, you know, AFI and stuff like that, up to now we're bands on Fearless can get nominated for Grammys, and that's insane to me. So I think it's amazing. I'm always like rooting for our friends, you know, to do stuff like that.
Absolutely. I mean, the Grammy Metal Performance category, which is the one that our friends are typically nominated in, has a very funny history. I don't know if you guys remember. I think it was like 89 or 88 or something. The first one, the award went, Metallica played at the Grammys, right? So, oh my God, first metal band ever playing at the Grammys.
Yeah.
And then they lost to Jethro Tull
with the flute.
That's a famous one.
I remember.
And then I think that the next 3 years they gave Metallica the award just to say sorry, you know. But it's so bad. Like when you look back at the nominations in that category, so much of the time it's irrelevant bands. Sometimes it's live records. Like I think a few years ago, Black Sabbath got nominated for The Wizard, which originally came out in 1970. Mm-hmm. You know, in like 2007 or something. Like that, a live version of that is
like
nominated.
A reissue or something.
Yeah.
Weird.
Like
I didn't know that was allowed.
What?
I think that what I've seen is it feels like they're trying to like catch up on what they missed from awarding some of these great records and bands.
That makes sense.
And it's like we are living in this moment where to us it might seem insignificant to what's happening in music today,
right?
But we all might not be doing what we're doing without it, and I think it's kind of them trying to catch up. Obviously,
yeah,
having Under Oath, having I Prevail, having bands represented that are newer, I think that's the first stage of it kind of balancing out. I think
I Prevail is kind of the best example of that, because this is their second album, it's their breakthrough album. I mean, to be honest, Define the Great Line probably should have got a Grammy nomination too.
Absolutely.
This is like kind of, they're probably saying sorry about that and giving it to Erase Me, you know?
I guess we can just re-release it and then get a Grammy nom.
Do it live.
I think so.
Live, that's how it works. Yeah.
Can we'll you add Beyond to a bonus track just so
yes.
I could get a Grammy?
Yes.
But Aaron, thank you, bro. When you were nominated last year, you know, finally, they've been a band a long fucking time. Shit.
Sitting here calling me old.
Well, we're all old here. Even Telly's old.
I am older than I look.
Yeah.
How old are you?
If any of you can guess how old I am, I won't really give you anything, but I'll be surprised.
You got fucking glasses on. I don't know.
That's intentional. The older I get, the more I'm like, how can I become more mysterious? And it's just wear sunglasses.
Are you 30 yet? Are you
30? Oh, yeah.
You do have quite the look.
31.
Keep going. Wow, rude. I'm just kidding. I'm 33.
No, that's good.
That's the most insignificant age. Have you ever met someone that says, I'm 33 years old?
I'm 36. It's the same, bro.
It's like I hear 31, 35, all these. I've never met someone who was 33 years old until I looked at myself in the mirror when I had my birthday.
No one on earth is
33. No one has ever been 33 until I was.
Okay.
What did you ask me?
Well, I was gonna ask you. We finally got, you know, you got nominated, and it's a lot of recognition. How does that feel? I mean, did it change anything? Your parents were probably stoked. I think
it's weird because, on one hand, the band that I'm in and the way that we grew up, it was always like be humble. You know, you've known us for how long? You know what I mean? And
yeah.
We don't ever act like anything's happening. And that's something that we've like self-wired into ourselves. You know, it's be cool, like be thankful and be kind and put your head down and do your fucking job. But this one was, you couldn't shake it. We were stoked. You know what I mean? Like, because if you look at yourself in the mirror and you go, I'm going to be like, doesn't matter. It's just an award. It's the fucking Grammys, man.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's a big deal. And I think that you're doing yourself and your public a disservice if you say, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. Bullshit, it matters. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
We were super stoked. But I think for me, the hardest thing was kind of knocking down that attitude of like, oh, it doesn't mean anything. Like, we're humble, you know, and which is almost anti what we were trying to be. I think for us, we sat down and we're like, this is really special, you know, somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was the first record we had made in almost a decade,
right?
You know, so to be honored for that and to be able to go back around and still have juice in the tank means a lot. So
who beat you guys?
High on Fire.
Okay.
But they had been nominated like for 20 years or something.
Wow.
Like 15
really?
Years.
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. When we lost, I was like, oh, this is great. But I was sitting behind Jerry Cantrell, and Jenny was sitting next to Randy. So I don't know if you heard it, but he goes, well, that's our 9th one we've lost.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And we were, you know, we're going to tour with them like months later where it was like, you know.
Right.
Sheds filled with people.
Yeah.
So I didn't really get down on it because I was like, that dude wrote my favorite songs in high school and he just lost for the 9th time. So, yeah.
You know. Wow. That's crazy. So I don't know. I don't really know how to transition to other things. But I did want to take the opportunity because we have four, you know, lead singers that have been doing it a long time of various skill levels. Maybe in order right
here.
Well, you're really good, man.
He is really. He can also play the shit out of a guitar. So. And,
yeah, that's
and,
true.
And like, it's always interesting because, you know, you get four guys, different walks of life. Like, we got like kind of four different corners of the continent here. You know, when you're talking about where we grew up, we're all like in the same kind of age. But, you know, I, for example, when I sing, I don't really do much warming up. Vic, you warm up for like an hour or more. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's really interesting, just that take, you know, how we all do the same thing and do it differently. But I want to ask each one of you what the hardest part of being a singer is. Mm-hmm. And that could, you can take it any way you want. Like, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of that?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is the constant anxiety and fear of losing my voice on tour. It's just like, I think my whole demeanor, my whole, whether I'm happy or sad or excited or completely fucking scared is whether my voice is working that day. Whether I wake up and I can make a little like little noise inside my bunk, that determines whether this day is going to be good or I'm just going to be freaking out.
True.
Because like, I mean... as our band started growing, you know, and you started playing bigger venues and there was just this pressure to perform a good show every night. And when you wake up and you're sick or something is just not working right, you're worn out. You just, to not be able to do the one thing you're supposed to do is like really scary for me. So that I think is my biggest like fear, hardest thing for me on tour. I don't know about you guys, but
it's the anxiety of it for me too.
Yeah.
It's like, and I'm in your club, like we're the no warm up club.
Very
know?
Little,
yeah.
But for me, warming up is more like kind of what Vic talked about. It's like the test,
yeah.
Of like, okay, we where all have am a sound remake today.
We all have a sound remake.
Yeah, what's your guy's sound? Yeah,
mine is that. Oh, is that yours?
No way, that's your sound.
Yeah,
is that really it?
Actually?
Yeah. If that works, you know, you have your falsetto.
Shane, what is your Shane?
I don't know. I kind of just do like a yah,
okay.
And then I go up until it starts to crack, and then I figure out on a guitar what note that is, and then I go, fuck.
Okay. Okay.
So you check the whole scale.
Fuck,
dude.
It's a G sharp.
That's way more.
That's Telly. Elaborate.
Oh, really?
Give us your sound.
Okay. What's your sound?
Mine is kind of like a roller coaster. It's like, ooh.
Okay.
And so I just, I'm like, all right, I'm not going to suck that bad tonight. And nice. That's kind of like my thing. And then I used to warm up a lot, like, you know, Vic, for an extended period of time, and I'm like, I have to do this. And then what I found for myself was that was adding to the anxiety, because if 100%. I felt like if I didn't hit this note in warm ups, I'm like, the show is gonna be horrible, when in reality 90% of the time I've had shows where I didn't have a voice until like 1 minute before I went on stage, and then I maybe saying the best of the
and
whole
what,
year.
And what
so I'm
is
like,
that?
Ah,
is
does
that,
it matter?
Is that adrenaline that comes over you? Because that's happened to me too before.
It's
where I've
mental. I think it is adrenaline, but like I'm the same way, which is it really works for him. But if I like put headphones in, Spencer does this every night, mm-hmm. you know, like turn the shower on in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And for me, I find that like if I think I'm totally screwed if I think about it. So I just focus on everything else but mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I'll do the test in the morning, but by the time I get to the show, it's like, it either is or it isn't. And you know what? Most people don't really care if it doesn't. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I know.
That
yeah.
brings me
well,
so much peace is like, if you get up on stage and it's a little cracky, like, I'm not going to go watch a band that I love and be like, well, you know, he didn't warm up and you could fucking tell. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just not going to do that. They're up there. They came there for you. So for me, it's like, I try to picture people are just appreciative that you did it. you know. So that's given me a lot of peace in my elder.
I'm gonna go a little controversial with it right now.
Oh, I love this.
I want to know. I've had to do this. I don't know if you guys have ever had to take steroids.
I never have.
I have so many times.
Yeah. Oh my God, really?
So many doctors in America have seen my ass.
I have.
Oh, like the shot, shot in the ass thing.
Yeah,
shot and
I've
or
heard
in the
of
arm,
the shot in the ass or what?
Or the arm or whatever.
I've only ever had it in the ass.
I've had arm, ass, and I had one time literally in my throat.
Ah, bro.
It was brutal.
Okay,
but
so
I was super, what doctor super was sick.
So I don't even know this option. In fact, I've done over 200 episodes, and this has been talked about very little.
Hmm.
This the performance enhancing drugs of lead singers.
It really is.
But what happened? So you... Is this like when you're sick or like you've had a couple bad shows and you need something to get over the hump?
Or
you wake up in your bunk and you're like, and it's not there.
It's usually dire straits. It's like the LA show.
Yeah.
It's the last show of the tour. You're so worn out. You barely can talk anymore. And it's like the big show that the industry's going to be here. Everyone's going to be here. And they're like, this is the big show. And you're so worn out that you can barely do anything. And I've had to do it a couple times where it basically just alleviates all the swelling in your throat so that you can let sound out again.
Wow.
And that, I've had it sick.
Like
a chest cold. I feel like if you're on the road, the worst thing that you can do is get a chest cold. You know what I'm talking about?
Totally.
Once you start coughing, you can't stop.
You're screwed.
Yeah.
Because then it swells it all up, right?
So who do you call for this shot?
Rock docs.
Rock docs.
A rock doc?
They're actually called rock docs, by the way.
Oh, okay.
This is the real term for that doctor that comes out and helps you out.
I got the full list. I'll send it to you just in case.
I want to know about this.
We got one time. We were playing. It was right after Under Oath got back together. We were playing at the Nokia, like 5-day announcement, and it sold out.
New York City?
No, here.
Okay. I thought you said Nokia.
It's right. It is.
Oh, there's a Nokia here too.
Nokia. Now it's Novo, I think.
Novo. It was Novo. Okay. Yeah. So we called this rock doc, and he came out, and he gave us all 6 of us medicine. And I felt crazy. Like I had just done all of Pablo Escobar's cocaine. I felt insane. And we found out they gave us all pure ephedrine to like just get us through the show. It was insane.
Wow.
I thought we were going to die.
Is there a video of this show?
That's never happened to me, by the way. I've never had a drug dealer.
No, he was a doctor.
When they give you the steroid shot, does it like make you feel like, does it do anything?
I feel it in my eyes a little bit. Like it's kind of like drinking a lot of coffee or something. And you're like, there's something happening inside of me, but it's sometimes not like an overwhelming feeling.
Sometimes they couple it with a B12 shot too, which I've had, which does make you feel kind of zippy. Yeah,
I've never felt anything awful.
Interesting.
I don't know. But
wow.
Sorry to sidetrack
this
conversation.
We are learning some shit today, boys and girls. Wow. Okay. I love this. This is going awesome.
I just like relating to people, like sometimes, you know, like other singers, when you find out that they do the same thing that you do, it makes you feel less crazy for doing it.
Absolutely.
We've had rock docs come out like in other countries. Mm-hmm. We found doctors in like England and Germany and all kinds of stuff.
I just picture this old man with a briefcase.
That's it.
Trudging in and opening it and just syringes of like.
That's pretty much. It's
I don't know why.
Pretty close to that.
Okay. It is, all right. Man. All right. Well, while we're on the topic of things that everyone's probably interested in hearing about, we're all people that have written a lot of lyrics. And I think that lyric writing is probably for some people, it's very, very difficult, the most difficult. For some people, it's the most important. For some people, don't think of it that way. And I remember when we did a podcast together, Vic, you told me that you write an entire basically like albums worth of music finished completely and then you just add the vocals after and you don't even think about the vocals until that. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of wondering how that approach differs from like the way that you do it, Aaron, and the way that you do it, Telly, as well. Mm-hmm. In terms of like your approach to when you are, you know, coming up with lyrics, which ultimately is what so many people are gravitated towards your respective bands for.
Yeah, I think starting as a guitar player first, I think, was where that comes from me. You know, that's what I learned first, was playing guitar, and then started singing after. So I always focused on the music more, or more so that it was the easiest thing for me. Comes to me easier, and the lyrics always were the thing that took a lot more time and a lot more. That's just kind of how I always worked, was music first because of my guitar playing.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that you don't like to not even think about it. I mean, you know, you would say like you kind of know if the music's going to work that you'll be able to come up with a vocal over it. The same way that if the chords make sense, you can always write a lead guitar part over it. Like you treat a vocal like that, which I thought was a really interesting, interesting take.
I think my take on it is if the music itself can give you emotion without words, then it's a great start.
Wow. Yeah.
So like, you know, if you're feeling things, if you're like, this is really sad or this is really taking me to a place, that's where I start. Like it has to have that base. And then I'm like, I already feel like I have something and I can go from there, you know?
I mean, even though I am not a crazy guitar player like Vic, and I do create a lot of the vocal stuff after music, it is still the same way for me. I didn't start like actually like writing songs for our band until like the last few records. But for me, even when I was listening to songs that weren't my own, I was listening for that emotional connection and be like, okay, this song makes me feel something. And then if it made me feel something, then I would be like, what does it make me feel? Is there a story that resonates because of that emotion? Right. And it kind of like sets you into this path. But I write lyrics like year round, but it'll be a line or it'll be a random thing. Sometimes it ends up being used years later. Sometimes it means nothing, but it just gets me started on a melody. So for me, it's just, I tune into the emotion of the musical aspect. I don't like to write, I would never write a song melody first because I want to accent what the music's doing rather than just build. I don't know. It just doesn't work for me trying it like, hey, this melody sounds really cool. I mean, Linkin Park is a great example of, you don't need to even shift notes at times to have a powerful thing, but it's because of everything else that happens. So in theory, anything can be catchy, you know?
Right.
That's irrelevant. So I try to focus on the melody way later.
Right. Mm. Well, it's interesting you bring up that feeling. Like, has anybody here listen to a song and there's like this one part of a song, even when you hear it over and over again, there's one part of the song and you just feel like you get like the chills kind of. Has everyone had that happen? Or some people? I could want to make it my life's mission to figure out what that is. Cause it's God. What is that? Is that a note? Is that a lyric?
No, I know exactly what you're
saying. Setup to it. What makes that phenomenon happen? Because I think that is why music is so powerful, because of that one thing that you feel. Like there's this one, for example, I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard of Frank Turner. There's this one fucking song called "I Am Disappeared," and the second verse starts, and this kick drum starts, and he hits this one note, and every time my whole body just like tingles at this one moment in the song. Doesn't matter how many times I've heard the song, and I to this day I don't know like scientifically why. Mm-hmm. That happens, but there's got to be a reason.
I don't know. I remember exactly the time when I was dating my high school girlfriend and her brother. You know, I had my high school band, and he was listening to our music, and he was like, gave me goosebumps. And I was like, I always remember that because like whenever you get that feeling, it's special, and that's when you know you have something.
Right.
And lately, I've been laughing whenever I hear something like that. I feel like is really. Like I got something really good. Like when the part hits, I start laughing because I'm like, I'm like, hell yes, this is gonna be great.
Yeah,
I think I'm laughing because I can't wait to see what it does like later, you know, live and on the record and stuff.
Totally.
I have a theory. I think it's, I don't think it's science. I think it's, I mean, obviously you could probably talk about like sound waves or whatever, but I think it's honesty. That's what I really think. I think when an artist, whether it's music or we're talking about lyrics now, but when anything happens and it makes you feel something, I think it's because that person that made that, it's like they intended for something to be completely them. I really do. And then you get a little weird glimpse inside of somebody's window when you hear that, and you're like, whoa.
There's like a strange recorded telepathy.
I think
that someone's
that makes sense.
That's my literal theory because
that's deep.
I think for me, the most important thing about music is how truthful are you being? And I don't mean like writing out exactly, but like with all of it, like what's your motive? You know, that's the biggest thing for me is like when I sit down to make music, I always try with my whole gut not to have a motive. That motive should be like, this is where I am. Bleh, here it is. You know what I mean? I think that we live in a world where a lot is contrived, you know, a lot of stuff is contrived. So I really think that when you don't contrive something, when it's unequivocally you, I think that's when it really is.
Oh, 100%.
The best.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I'm also going to be switching to your rock doctors now because whatever is creating this.
Dude, I agree. I think that...
I haven't seen one in a while.
When you're saying that, I was just like, I know you all maybe have heard a song on the radio where like you just feel like they spent no time making that song and it's just like it's not there, you know, like that emotion and that truth that you're talking about. I can call it, I feel like I can call it out. Like I'm just like, this is them in the studio and they just went with what they had and didn't kind of like bring it there and bring it to a real place. And I get that feeling sometimes. That just made me think about that.
I was listening to a Dax Shepherd podcast this morning.
Podcast.
Me too. This morning on the treadmill and, he had a singer on that I'll leave unnamed, but he was a country singer. And in Nashville with country music, it's like a song farm. You know, there's songwriters run that town, so people pick songs. And he's like, yeah, man, you know, they always say you better pick a hit that you like because you're going to have to sing it. And I'm like, huh. Like, is
can you
it
imagine if that's the way it worked for our bands?
You know what I mean? Like, that's, but you're right. Like, even you can hear these songs on the radio and you're like, I'm going to call bullshit on that right now. Even though it's catchy,
right.
It's perfectly made. Like, I'm never going to feel anything from it. So for me, I think that it's got to be that window, that cut open heart window, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I love the talk. So I don't want to put you guys on the spot, but because this is a live atmosphere and we're all having fun here, I think. I always love to talk about, everyone loves to hear tour stories. And, you know, thinking about us all knowing each other for so long, like talking about over 10 years, and we've all been on tour. I've toured with all three bands. I don't know if you've toured with each other. But I just love hearing about the memories that people have when it's like you remember something happened and you can't believe that it actually happened, but it happened because you were there and it happened. And I just wonder if anybody has a tour story off the cuff that's a good one that would entertain the people that graciously are listening to this right now.
Oh, God.
I know it's kind of the worst question, but it's also the best question.
I don't know. I always go to... God, there's so many. My mind is
I could start.
Flying. Yeah, you start me off and I'll...
So we were on tour with Bayside one time, and this would have been 2003. We both put out our first albums and we went out to California for the first time. So we were going down the coast. We got two speeding tickets on the way to the show, trying to make it. So that was a bum out. And we played the show. There's not a lot of people. And we didn't have a place to stay. And we were able to... So, you know, what you do is you put the sign at the merch table. Can we stay at your house? Six people. And someone comes around and he's like, yeah, you can stay at my house. It's cool. So we're like, all right. So we follow this guy. And they always say it's 20 minutes away, but it's like it's always more like an hour. So we get to this house, and the guy says, "Hey, can you guys park the just don't park in front of the house. Can you park like down the street a bit?" I'm like, "All right." So we park. We get in the house, and it's a nice house. And he's like, "Yeah, help yourself to all the food in the fridge, whatever you want, whatever you know." And the guy's like, "Hey, I got this trick." Trick, okay. What's the trick? He said, "Oh, it's really cool." So the guy pulls down his pants, and his friend pours lighter fluid on his genitals, and he lights his balls on fire right in front of us, without unprovoked. We didn't ask for this trick. So, and the funny part was he had a lot of trouble putting the fire out. His friend was hitting him on the dick with
wow.
Yeah, with like a tea towel from this house. So a lot of us were, you know, pretty weirded out at that point. A couple people were like, yeah, I'm sleeping in the fucking van. And what happened next was kind of interesting. Is I started looking around the house, and there was like family photos, and I realized it wasn't his house. He was his parents were house sitting for this house. It was his neighbor.
God.
So we were in the house, and we're like, well, what's going on? And he's like, oh no, it's okay. Like, when are they? Like, are they coming back? Like, and he's like, oh yeah, they're gonna come back like tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. You guys have to be out by then. We're like, what the fuck? Yeah, and that guy's in a band now called Heart in Hand. If anyone's ever heard, yeah.
Did you guys bounce
the guy with his balls on fire?
Yeah,
did you stay the night?
That guy's a singer in a band now. Wow. I want to have him on the podcast.
I would have left. Did you stay?
I stayed. Yeah, it was really bad. Well, the van was full. There's only so many people can sleep in the van, so there was like three people in there. I was like, shit, and I it was so weird. I slept in like this, like girl's bedroom. It was fucking weird. Yeah, it was not cool.
We stayed at a house one time. And we get there, and she's like, this girl let us stay at her place, and same thing, merch table, and I forget where it was. It would have been like 03 as well.
I'm assuming all these stories happened when we were driving ourselves.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once you get before in a bus, tour buses, nothing cool happens anymore.
No. Yeah. So we get to this house, and she's like, I only have one bathroom. I'm so sorry. And we were all disgusting. And she's like, you guys can just take turns. I'm like, fine. So Spencer comes and gets me. He goes, get the fuck in here. I'm like, I'm not coming in the bathroom with you. Like, what? He's like, get in here. And I swear to God, this is true. I open the shower curtain, and there's a skunk. Just, there it is. There's a skunk.
In the tub?
In the tub. Well, it's like a stand-up shower stall. And,
oh, okay.
And so Tim is always the person in our band that I'm like, go fucking talk to them. You know what I mean? Like, so he goes and tells this girl, did you know there was a skunk in your shower? And she's all, yeah, that was my pet skunk. You can just pick him up and move him.
Whoa.
So we're like,
wait, it was alive?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was a dead skunk. Okay.
Yes.
A live skunk.
It was a live
pet skunk. That's not a thing.
It was a live skunk. And she's like, yeah, just pick him up and move him. I'm like, wait, what? Like, Spencer's naked with a towel around him over here, and I'm like, dude, this is shot. So we literally got dressed and left.
Yeah, wow. I don't blame
you. I couldn't pick up the skunk. Another one really quick. Shane and I, we went to Europe together for the first time, Silverstein and Under Oath.
Yes, we did. 2005.
And we shared a bus, an 18-bunk bus with 21 people.
That's right.
I've done that before.
Three people had to sleep wherever.
Not in
bunks, in lounges or on the floor.
You and I had a bed, for sure.
Yeah, we did.
But I remember that someone...
they're made for like ski trips.
Yeah. Our tour manager had eaten... The bus driver, his name was Tricky, and he hated us. All of us.
I'll never forget the first day. We were playing Cardiff, Wales, and I'm watching you guys play, and I'm just like sitting watching guys drinking a beer, and I hear some English guy talk, and I look... And it's a guy drinking a beer, and I don't do a double take, and I'm like, that's our fucking driver. Why is he drinking a beer?
Oh yeah,
watching our show.
But he
should be asleep, dude.
He had a piece of pizza in the fridge just towards the end of the tour, and it had like these little squids on it. I don't know how you say squid plural. I think it's like, just squid, like calamari, but like the tentacly part, and like all these pieces of fish and shit. And our tour manager thought there was no food anywhere. We all got sick on the tour. It was a disaster. But he ate this pizza. And he woke up middle of the night sick. And we were all sleeping. But he threw up in the sink of the bus and little squid pieces clogged the sink. That's disgusting. And all night you could hear it sloshing onto the floor out of the bus sink. And I woke up that night and I walked and stepped on that squid piece. And I got in my bed. And 2 days later, I found a piece of dried squid in my bed.
In your toes?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
God.
Damn.
That's a good one.
That tour, I remember it was sponsored by Jägermeister, and they gave us two cases of Jägermeister, like, so 24 bottles, and it was gone in like 2.5 days, and Under Oath didn't drink.
We didn't drink yet, no.
That was a messy tour, man.
God.
Messy tour.
Hectic.
Yeah.
One time, we used to drive an RV. That was what we had.
It was pretty cushy.
It was like amazing. We were almost embarrassed because we felt like assholes. Like, because we felt like we came home one day and my parents, they were so scared for us, like driving ourselves in a van and sleeping in the snow. And, you know, we didn't care, but like my parents were real worried. So one day we got home and there was an RV waiting for us, and it was the most amazing thing. We toured in that thing forever. And anyways, driving through New York is one of the worst things any band can ever do. And we're driving an RV in a trailer, and we pretty much every time we go there, we're gonna get a ticket. We have to park it and just count on it. Anyways, there's low bridges everywhere. There's places you can't drive. We've been escorted by the police, like under bridges that we can't go, and like yep. tunnels. And this one time it was a great show. We're all going out to a party afterwards, and I'm following Dance Gavin Dance in their trailer and van, and. We're going under this bridge, and it's just like a regular, you know, East Coast bridge, unmarked, nothing. I just nail the top of our RV, and I knock off the entire air conditioning system on top,
no.
and it just falls into the street, and it like it's like sparks flying, like my buddies and like sitting on the couch, and literally the entire roof just like rips open, and. And that it just went from such a great night to the worst night of my life. So that was awful.
Wow.
We had the same thing happen to us one of our first times in a bandwagon. Yeah. And a sign fell off in New York City of the clearance change from like a taller to shorter. And full speed, our TM who was driving us smashed into a bridge. or a tunnel, but not just smashed in. We were going fast enough. It peeled back the roof, like literally like
oh,
a
God.
Can. But we were stuck there because we were going so fast, and we had to get pulled out. And there was this homeless guy that was sitting like literally right next to it. And he was just like, "Why'd you do that?" and we're like
jammed, like
oh, we were jammed.
Well, and, when you hit that though, you must have all flown. Like you're.
Oh no, we were free. Well, I thought there was some sort of volcanic eruption in New York or something. I'm like, it was insane. Luckily, none of us were in like the top bunks. We were all just sitting down, like watching TV. And then it's just literally like, oh, well, there's the sky, and this is not supposed to be here. Here's this tunnel. And then there's this homeless man just walks to the front, and he's just like knocking on the bandwagon. He's just like, "Why'd you do that?" As if we like wanted to.
When I did that to our RV, it also proceeded to rain like the next 3 days, and we had a hole in the roof. So,
oh yeah,
yeah.
You were just touring with the hole in the roof
for a few days before we could get it fixed, and there was a hole, and so we had like this trash can that was just catching rain. And, yeah, that was crazy.
That's so incredible. Glamorous.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
do you guys know what bandwagons are? Yeah. Okay. You guys
I'd rather walk.
If for anybody that doesn't know, there's like there's these levels of right before a bus, there's a bandwagon, and they're basically like UPS trucks that they put like bunks in.
Oh, yeah.
It's rough.
It's a box truck with no suspension whatsoever.
I think a van is better.
And they
I'm
literally
serious.
Just put like four walls, like a pod, basically.
Yeah.
And then they put bunks in it. Like
it's
that's
almost
that's
a bus. And you can drive them too. Like
yeah.
you can
they're
you don't have to have a license.
In Indiana.
We fucked one of those things up.
Oh yeah. Well they're licensed in Indiana, and I guess Indiana doesn't have any laws. So they're allowed, like
makes
literally anyone in
sense.
This room with a regular driver's license can drive this huge truck with a huge trailer on the back. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
Did you know that Silverstein, we were the first band ever to be in a bandwagon?
I didn't know that.
We were.
Did you guys wreck it?
No, what happened, we used to be with this company out of Indiana that Jeremy, the guy that runs Bandwagon, he used to own. They were called Northern Gold. So they were a pretty small bus company, but we always rented from them because they made fresh bread and soup in the morning for you.
I remember this.
That was the thing they did.
Locked you in.
So one time we were trying to get a bus, and we got the quote, and it was like we were supporting another band. It was like, you know, there wasn't a lot of money, and we were like, shit, I don't know if we can afford to do the tour in the bus. Like, we might have to go do it in a van. And they were like, actually, we've got this other
option.
And if I looked at my computer right now, I could probably find the email from Paul. Like to Shane at SilversteinMusic.com, subject line weird bus. And I have pictures of the bandwagon, and we were like, I don't know, fuck it, let's do it. And we did.
So dangerous. It's so,
yeah.
It's that thing is rough, dude.
They weren't black back then either. They were like tan colored.
Oh, I'd literally think a van is better.
I think a van is safer and better.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, because 90% of the time, the person driving it should absolutely not be driving
that's
it.
That's true.
And no. That's the most dangerous part.
We've always gotten a driver. We've never driven it ourselves. But
I don't trust a single person in my van to drive one of those fucking things.
We've always hired people, but it's always someone they're like, yeah, they know how to drive this thing. And you're just like, there's no credentials. There's no you just have to take someone's word for
my
it.
My other band, they almost rented one, and we drove it. I wouldn't touch that thing. But we got no deposit back. We had to pay thousands of dollars at the end trying to park it. We ran into a tree. Like, you know, the whole thing. And, it's not safe.
Yeah. I mean, they're not great. So I want to open the floor to anyone that might have a question for any of us up here. Does anyone have a question? You can raise your hand.
Anyone. You can ask anything.
No questions. Everyone's. We got one right here. What's your name?
Icebreaker.
What's your name? Come here. They won't hear the mic. So what's your name?
It's Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
What's your question?
Any tips? I guess it's not a question. Do you have any tips for a new frontman of a pop punk band?
Mm. Tips for a pop punk band singer.
I feel like you didn't do really anything.
Yeah, I'd say you gotta what's the thing? You gotta eat the pizza first. You eat the pizza.
what does that mean?
Right, that's important.
A lot of jumping. Work. Do leg day.
He's got the backwards hat. That's a good step.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's most of the way.
You can dress like you don't care. At all times.
Long shorts, cargos.
Yeah.
Long socks.
Lanyard around the neck is always a plus, too.
Never take it off.
No. Tour laminate around it. Even if you're not on tour, make sure you got the laminate on. Yeah, mic stand on the stand. Yeah, that's the way
super,
to go.
Super, like, baby face or the biggest beard ever. No in between.
Yep.
Wax if you have to.
Can you wax your face?
Sorry. Yeah, you can wax
is this
anything.
Is this giving you what you want? Perfect. Great. Any other questions? Anybody? Maybe we'll take it more seriously. What's up, man? What's your name? Come up here if you don't mind. He's got an Aaron Gillespie shirt on.
Mm.
There you go.
Who made those?
That's wow, you got some very short
Alan.
Hair.
My question's what's the process for choosing a set list for a tour?
Hmm. Ooh, that's a good question. I will say that it gets a lot harder the more you're longer your band.
I think it gets easier because you got more songs to choose from.
Oh, I feel it's way harder.
Well, fucking guitar.
It's way harder.
It's way harder.
I feel like it's way harder. Explain this because I've never heard this before.
This is a pot take.
For me, it's like, you know, like it gets easier for me because I just feel like you have more to choose from. Is that not right?
More opportunity to piss someone off for not playing a song they want.
Well, because sometimes, you know, when you're like just starting, you're trying to fill your set. You're just trying to fill 45 minutes and you barely have that in your album.
Right.
You're doing covers, you know, and I think as time goes on, you're just like, it gets harder to choose what you want to play, but at least you don't have that problem anymore.
I guess when you're in Pierce the Veil and every song that hit, it's super easy to pick your set.
I always wish that we were like Pearl Jam, where the set list is different every single night.
Right.
I do wish that.
I wish we could have the ability to do that, but we're a different band that likes to do everything like very theatrical and get everything. You know, we like to plan everything and put on a big show for everybody.
Right.
You know, like the confetti's going to hit right here, you know, and like everybody's got
to
have.
And the light show has to sync, you know, it's got to have the lights programmed.
We like live for
that.
You know, we love that.
Right.
And, but, you know, at the same time, there was actually a time when we wrote two set lists just so that they could be a little different each night. But I've always wanted that kind of vibe where you can be like, write it right before you go on stage and just play whatever.
We did it for a while. When we did our 10 year anniversary, we did four nights where we played all four albums in a row. God. So we were brushed up on everything.
Sounds like a nightmare.
And then the next, it sucks.
So, I have anxiety.
My mind would be mush.
But
I have
hard.
To Google my own lyrics all the time. So I can't imagine.
Well, we learned them all. And then the next like month or whatever, we just were like, we did like request sets and shit.
Wow. It's my least favorite thing in a band to do.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. I hate it.
Huh.
With Under Oath, like back to the writing thing, we don't do the whole like, every song happens differently. With my solo stuff, every song, it's like it might start with a context, like an idea, and then you might take a guitar that's tuned to like drop A and write a song, and then you write the next song and it's an E standard. So our thing is just so, it takes us a week to like just figure out how to play the songs. And then like the last tour we went on, we had 20 some odd guitars on tour. It's just like, that is just, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Guitar tech just wants to murder you.
Stress. I hate that part.
So yeah, to answer your question, it's hard.
Write all your songs in the same tuning.
Yeah.
Don't be creative.
Just be Green Day.
Just be Green Day. That's Kick hard. Everyone in your band out. So there's a bass player, guitar player, and a drummer. And it'll be great. Good luck.
Any more questions? Anyone? Yeah, I knew the floodgates were about to open. What's up? Yeah, if you can come up here if you don't mind, just so.
Actually, you want to take my mic? I'm going to go to the bathroom real quick. I'll hear whatever you have to ask, and I probably.
Oh, that's so nice of you.
Here, you can take my seat,
take
actually.
A seat.
Set up.
There we go.
I warmed it up.
What's your name?
Oh, my name's Emmanuel.
Emmanuel. Yeah. Got it.
So I just want to know, like, what was the one of the like memorable thing that happened during a show, like that you guys performed in?
I got hit in the face with a bottle once.
Ooh.
It was a vitamin water bottle that was full.
Ow.
Whoa. On Warped Tour in California. Yeah.
You guys are more.
I want to say it was an accident, but I'm not so sure.
Mm.
Yeah, that was memorable.
Man.
I saw a huge black eye.
It might have been in 2018. I saw a kid in a wheelchair get crowd surfed onto the stage in Vegas at the Hollywood Bowl.
That's badass.
It was sick.
I love that.
He got all the way up.
Sick.
Like two dudes stopped playing, and like Spencer like stopped, and they like picked the whole. It was cool.
God.
Let's go to Telly.
Telly.
Telly's in the can.
Crazy things on stage. God. I'm trying to. There's just been a billion things that have happened to us. Okay, I got one. I started using a wireless mic, and just because I'm a guitar player, and
because you love nu metal.
No, because actually I love
your inner Fred Durst.
I watched I think that Billy Joe from Green Day does it well, you know. Uh-huh. And I was like, how do you be a front man and still be playing guitar? Because it's really hard. We can't get in people's faces because we're playing guitar the whole time. And I found that, you know, he does that. He just grabs it, runs around, puts it back.
Right.
And it's like, so I started doing that. And you know, before each show, we're backstage and we're getting ready to go on. And, you know, they bring me the microphone and I check my ears and, you know, give it a little check. And then they go out there and put it on the mic stand for me. And so we start the show, big intro, you know, all this tension. And I go out there, and there's no microphone on the stand. And I'm like, where's the fucking mic? I'm like yelling at my crew. we have a talkback mic. It's a special mic that only our crew hears. So I like press a button, and I'm like yelling. I'm like, where's the mic? There's no mic on the stand. You know, like it's about to like start the show. I'm about to sing. And
where was this? Do you remember where the show was?
No, I have no idea.
Okay.
Freaking out. Like everyone backstage running around looking for the microphone. I reach to my back pocket and I pull out the microphone and just set
you
it
felt
on
like a giant ass.
Oh my God. I apologize to our entire crew after the show. I was like, guys, like, I'm so sorry. That was
I have
my
a good
bad.
No mic story. I was playing drums for Paramore and we were on tour in South America with Kings of Leon.
Oh, wow.
And we were playing at, these are the biggest shows I've ever seen.
Yeah.
We were playing
like stadium, like
we were playing,
arenas and
no,
stuff.
No. We were playing on an airstrip. Like,
wow.
Like a runway.
Like a tarmac.
Yes, in Brazil. And there's people, man. Like heads and bodies.
Yes.
And we go out there and I'm like, it's Lollapalooza. Is Lollapalooza, South America. And we go out there, it's dark. And Haley, she has a cordless microphone and she always would take it out with her. And I don't know what happened, but we start playing Ain't It Fun. And it's people, man. I mean, it's electricity. And there's no vocals. And I'm just sitting back there and playing drums. And I look, and she's just dancing. And I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, I don't have a microphone.
So you just start dancing.
So she just danced for like three quarters of the song, and then someone brought her one.
Wow.
It was sick.
Eventually somebody figured it out.
Yeah. She didn't get mad, though. That was a takeaway. Like, she just was like.
It's incredible.
Doing her thing. And I was like, yeah.
Damn.
I would have lost my shit.
Like Vic.
Like Vic.
Yeah. Yelling it.
It was in your pocket.
Telly, where are you? Get up here. Oh, okay. Okay. Thanks for the question, man.
Thanks,
appreciate
man.
It. So I don't. I guess we probably got to wrap this up pretty soon. Telly's got a birthday party to go to.
Ow.
Yeah. But
sure. Blame
I want to ask you guys just kind of what's going on. I want to know about new music from Vic. I want to know about new music from Under Oath, perhaps. What do you think, Bone, you're going to break next?
You know, that was what I was thinking about when I was urinating in the restroom just now, was my craziest thing, and I've probably broke more bones touring than any person ever.
Yeah, I think you have the record.
You broke your fucking back, dude.
Yeah, that's
that is about as it gets.
So I counted the other day. I think I've now in my lifetime, I broke over 40 bones.
Are you serious?
40?
Yeah. But it sounds really bad when you say it like that. A lot of them have been just like through sporting events and random things where you're just kind of like, this happens. Then I carried that into touring and I broke my back and then I stayed on tour and everyone was just like, you're so dumb. And I was just like, this is what, you know, you do. You just keep going.
Well, I hope that you don't break anymore, and I hope you, you know, take it easy on the
I wear sunglasses now, so I don't have to do other crazy cool shit.
New record coming out February 21st?
Yes, sir.
Monomania? That's exciting.
Yes, that is the name of it.
And what can people expect?
I don't think you can expect what the record's going to sound like. You know, going back just briefly to like what Aaron was talking about with like, you know, kind of like putting your soul and your truth out there. You know, we started writing way sooner. I think the first song that I ended up writing that ended up on the album, I wrote in November of 2018. One of the songs on the record, we started trying to write 5 years ago and we just couldn't find like the soul of the song. And, you know, sometimes that happens, but for this one, it was just like emotions, and if a song felt a certain way and we connected to it, we just took it as far as it could go. And so for the first time, like, I know that sounds kind of crazy, 12 years in, me and Vic were talking about it earlier, I feel like this is the most me that I've felt. I think vocally, like, this is the most honest, and this is just the closest to who The Word Alive has been building towards this whole time. But there's definitely going to be people who have listened to us from like day one that they might not understand it.
They're going to be pissed.
You know, there's no 2012 on this record, but hopefully what transcends that is just that I think that people really just want to hear real shit. And I think when people do, you get that feeling, and
you might
not know what it is, but it's going to make you keep listening to it. And for me, like, my records that I grew up listening to that made me feel that way, a lot of them I didn't know if I really liked it at first, but there was just something about it that pulled me in. And so I hope this record can be that to, you know,
awesome.
Old fans and new fans.
Awesome. And Aaron, the Almost record is out now. It's been out
in October.
A little
We're
while.
We're on tour now.
Yep.
In a van.
Nice.
No. I realized how not cut out I was for that.
Well, you know, when you get in the van, at least you get hotels every night and
it's
stuff
cool
like
to
that,
see stuff,
right?
Too.
You get
it's
to
cool.
Right.
It's cool to see stuff.
You can take the van through Taco Bell drive through. You can't take a bus through the drive through.
If I ate Taco
advantages.
Bell at 36, I might shit out my liver. I don't know what would happen. I don't mess with the Taco Bell. No, yeah, so we're on tour doing that. The record came out in October. I made that record in 6 days in a house in Joshua Tree. It's like a cathartic kind of exercise for me because we've really started writing some Under Oath stuff now. We're doing a bunch of in a couple weeks. We're like our last record was such a different process for us. You know, we did this thing where we just said we're not going to make the statement. Is this Under Oath enough? You know,
right.
Because I think that's, for a band that's been a band for 15 years, it's super dangerous to go, is this us enough? Because the us that we were when we were 23 is just, I mean, we're all in our mid, we have 13 kids between the six of us. You know what
wow.
I mean?
Wow.
So it's like.
And it's you got just, one on the way, don't you?
I do, a girl.
Yeah, congratulations.
Crazy. Congrats,
man.
I can't believe it. Thank you. So so we are actually going to all get in a room and like write like it's 2005, like with amps and no in-ears.
Nice.
And, And that's in a couple weeks. So we've been doing a bunch of like writing on
cool.
our own.
So maybe a record late this year, probably next year?
I don't know. You know what? We're not. I think that for us, we'll implode again if we say this is the. I would hope by the end of the year, but I just I don't know. I don't. And, you know, we never know what it's going to sound like with that band. It's, that band is like a. Every record is its own thing. So
can't
I have
wait.
No idea.
Can't wait. I love the last one.
Thank you.
And I like, maybe we'll get another Grammy nom out of it. And Vic. Wow, Vic. Hello.
My man.
You've been out of the limelight a little while. I know you're a slow writer. talk to me about what's been going on.
I am the slowest writer on planet Earth. I like that you have that mantra that you said, like, of like, is this Under Oath enough? Or like, I think ours, we've had a similar thing is where we're like, you know, we asked her, or I told the guys the other day, I was like, if we were starting over tomorrow, like as a new band, like what would we do if we were starting completely over tomorrow?
Probably hip hop would be a smart decision.
Just like, you know, from every aspect of it, you know, musically, marketing, anything, you know, anything about a band, like if we were starting over tomorrow, what would you do? And I think that works for anything, you know, like it can relate to anybody, but I thought it was we all were really inspired by that thought, you know, in that just sort of renewed us on what we need to do as a band. And I guess, you know, we've been a band for over 10 years now, and reaching that, what's the next 10 years going to feel like, and what's that going to be? I think that was the question that kind of kicked us off for this next record.
Okay.
I think I'm feeling like it's almost there. I've been working on it for a year and a half, almost two years. I don't even know how long it's been, but I think we have all the songs and we're getting like real close. I have an album title. I'm like feeling real good about everything.
Great.
So, you know, it's for us, it's just literally just, you know, lyrics take me forever. I like to wait until song presents itself. Sometimes, you know, I'll save a song. Like I'll be like, I'm not ready to tackle this lyrically yet. Cause it's not, I don't feel anything like that's important enough that I want to talk about, and I wait for that. And sometimes like I have to wait for it, and like that's just how we do it.
Yeah.
But it's a weird process and it takes forever, and you know, I love to tinker with guitar parts and vocal harmonies and this and that, and I never know what I'm doing or how to do it. It's literally, you just gotta, every writing process is completely different, and I think I'm finding the beauty in that and embracing that you can't do the same thing twice ever. I remember trying to, like, when we wrote our second record, I was like, God, I really want to write my lyrics like I did on the first record. I felt like it was my best work. And I was like, I gotta recreate that. And then I learned, you know, lessons over the years of each record that, you can't do that. It has to be current. It has to be what's going on in the last year of your life or whatever it is. And just trying to capture all that. And we're getting close, though. So I feel
great.
So that's where I'm at. Maybe a little more writing, and then I think we'll get there.
I love it. All right. Well, hey.
What's that? There's four of us.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, what's up with you?
We have a new one coming out. I know. I'm like the host, though. I don't know.
No.
I don't know when to talk.
Infinite is the best Silverstein song to date.
That's crazy.
I biasly agree.
And I feel like I'm in an infinite sandwich right now.
Thank you, Aaron, for putting your voice on it.
It's awesome how it happened.
No, we did a record. It's done. It's coming out March 6th. It's called A Beautiful Place to Drown. And coming out on UNFD, Unified Records.
It is the most interesting Silverstein music.
Yeah, and I think the record is a lot different for us. And I think, like Telly said, it's going to freak out a few people, but maybe that's good, you know?
It's always good.
This is LP number 9 for us, so if we're not going to, if not now, then when? So, we're feeling good about it, so.
I think learning to embrace, like, feeling, like, scared, like, oh, what's going to happen? Like, that's kind of, I feel like, how you should. If you go into it feeling like, yeah, we made what people want to hear, like, that's not.
Yeah, playing it safe is
Spencer has this thing that he says that, when Erase Me came out, people loved it and people hated it. There was nobody in the middle. Like, oh, that's all right. It was either like this band, I hate this band now, or this is their best work. But it was completely honest for us. And he has this thing that he always says that I think is so smart. He's like, if everyone's just like, yeah, it's good, like, you're in trouble then. People need to be polarized by it. I really think that. Like, they need to be like, oh my God, this is so good. Or I, like you said before, like, my favorite records I didn't like when I first heard them. They had to, they had to grow. So I think that if you're not making that music, you're not being honest. I really believe that. I think if you're just giving, you know, we could go make a Define the Great Line Part 2. We all could do that. And maybe it would sell and maybe it wouldn't. But it would be a lie to everybody.
Right.
It would be a lie for us to go, oh, where's your old shit? Like, our old shit, we don't feel the same way. And we're 36 now. So if we give you our old shit again, we're literally lying to you and taking your money. Yeah. You know?
I love it.
I literally completely agree.
I love it. We agree. We all agree. All right. Well, thanks so much. Anything else to tell the people before we wrap this up?
I want to thank Fearless for supporting my nonprofit, which is called Living the Dream Foundation. Some of the profits from this event are going to Living the Dream Foundation, which is
awesome.
I'm sure you guys have worked with them over the years. Yep. I just joined on about a year ago, and basically our statement is we make dreams come true for children and young adults who are suffering or battling life-threatening illnesses. So the way I came to know them was by just playing festivals, and they would this is what would happen. They would bring up a family who was there at the festival, a kid who was really going through it, going through something really life-threatening and struggling. This was like their day to go out, feel energized, meet their favorite bands, meet their heroes, watch from stage, just have the most VIP, awesome experience of their life. And I loved it. I like loved meeting these people, and it was the most tangible, real charity that I'd ever seen. So now, you know, years later, I'm a part of it now and helping run it. And it is, it's been so rad. So, so this event is helping keep Living the Dream Foundation going. If you guys want to donate or check it out, go to ltdfoundation.org. So,
perfect. All right. Thanks everybody for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to you guys. Fearless. 25 years, 25 more. I love it.
So there it is with the boys, Vic, Aaron, and Telly. I want to thank them so much for taking the time and really for just being open to sitting down and having such an honest conversation with me and with everybody about what we go through as lead singers. And some of the stuff, I don't know if anyone's ever talked about steroids. You know, that is crazy, and I wasn't even aware that it's so prevalent. And, you know, I guess it helps people get through the show. And I'll be honest, I'm going to think about this the next time I'm on tour and I'm having issues with my voice. But very, very, very cool stuff. And I want to thank them so much. I want to thank Heather and everyone at Fearless Records for setting this up. And I had a great time. Their Grammy party was awesome. So congratulations to Fearless celebrating 25 years. What a label. They've been so supportive of this podcast for so long. I think I've had like all their bands on. So really, really awesome. And I want to thank them again so much for having me. I will leave you with some tunes. Three artists. That means three songs. So here is Circles by Pierce the Veil, Rapture by Under Oath, and a brand new one, No Way Out, from The Word Alive. Peace and love. And we'll see you next week.
All my